Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game, live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership where the buzz is always about great service. Robbie Stanley, Paul Kuharski, Ian Safar here with you on this Tuesday morning. I got some tickets to give away later this hour to the Preds opening night game coming up on Thursday against the Columbus Blue Jackets, so make sure you're tuned in for that. Mike Herndon will be with us later this hour at 8:30. And we will get into all things Tennessee Titans with him. So looking forward to that. Taking your thoughts in the meantime, 615-737-1025. PK, one guy we've not talked about yet is Jeffrey Simmons, who is playing as well as I've seen him play. I mean, obviously back in 2021, he was really good, really dominant that year. And I think Titans fans have been searching for him to get back to that level ever since then. He's been outstanding.
He really has.
The year so far.
And part of it is health, certainly. Yep. He's had nagging stuff the last couple of years, not necessarily this early in the season, but ultimately. So you certainly hope he stays healthy. I had a he talked at the podium in Arizona, and I you know, was kind of offset to the side, and so really had an angle on him and his physique. And one of the best senses I got of just how slim he is, which is terrific. I really, and my guy Drew Beatty did a film study of him last week, which was remarkable about the stuff he's done this season. I really would like to go and look at some of his best play from earlier in his career and compare it. And I think the most striking thing would be you're going to feel like you're looking at a different guy,
right,
based on the size.
Body type. Yeah.
He's not defensive tackle size right now. You know, he's an intentionally undersized defensive tackle, which is really something. Look, I give all the credit in the world to Jeffrey Simmons. He not only the body reshaping – and determining that that's the way to go for him. But his leadership approach has changed, I think, pretty dramatically. His accountability scores way up. The thing is, though, he doesn't have much to account for because he's playing this well.
Yep.
So you erase the accountability factor when you're terrorizing the league. But I suspect he's more willing to raise his hand, say, my bad, if and when those moments come. He has that feel to him. He feels looser and less tense in that regard. I was happy for him. You know, he is as stand-up as anybody on the team. He understands part of his leadership thing is that to talk after every game. He could easily ask for a game off. I can't remember. He maybe asked for a game off in London the last time they were overseas. I'm not even sure if that's right, but maybe. Doesn't ask for games off in terms of having to be a face of the team and answer the questions. 10 losses in a row, you know, been talking about how tiresome it is. He knows it's tiresome for us, you know, has let off a lot of these conversations with, you know, this is redundant. This is, you know, tiresome.
Yep.
This is ridiculous.
Tired of talking about the same stuff.
It was nice for him, for everybody to be able to smile and talk about some good things happening and everything. And I think this puts them at a really awkward spot because obviously he's their most valuable trade chip. He's going to want and deserve new guaranteed money after this season. It's not the last year of his contract, but his guaranteed money is up.
Yep.
He changed agents, changed body type. His performance is through the roof now. They have to decide, are we going to give him a new deal with significant guaranteed money after this season and continue to have him as a foundational piece, which there's a good argument for. Don't trade your best guy. Build around him. You can also make a good argument that if we can get a second plus for this guy, defensive tackle is very important. And while he's very impactful, we have really got to address edge and corner and receiver, which are technically more impactful positions. And we can find a defensive tackle who's not going to be Jeffrey Simmons, but can do that job at a standard level while looking to get better play out of these peak positions where we just are not competitive enough. And I think you could argue both sides of that equation. And so I don't know what to do there. I don't think they're getting back in the race or anything here. And you get those picks plus a trade down from a top three spot, and you've got the kind of picks that Chad Brinker has talked about them wanting in order to get this thing going. So very difficult. And I don't factor this in. I don't. Fans do, you know. But he could conceivably wind up somewhere where he's got a chance to compete. People would hate to see him in Baltimore. You know who could use him badly? Baltimore. You know who else could use him badly? Buffalo.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and you're talking about, to your point, he's 28. So he's 28 years old, and he's playing the best football of his career. And on the one hand, you're looking at the Titans roster, and you're saying, you know, I was thinking about this the other day. Who's the Titans' second-best player?
Yeah, we've talked about this. Yeah, second-best player on defense.
Yeah, like it's –
on defense, it's impossible. Defense. Should be Imani Hooker.
Yeah.
He's not played particularly well. It's hard to find the second-best.
Very hard.
Robert Woods has probably been the second-best player.
Xavier
but I think
Woods,
he's Xavier Woods, sorry. Robert Woods. Jeez. Xavier Woods probably, but he seems to have leveled off a little bit.
Yeah.
But, yeah, second-best player overall and second-best player on defense, these are far too difficult questions to answer.
So I think that's the question that you've really got to consider.
You're
if you're
bare. You trade him and you are bare.
You're bad. I mean, like, and Joe brought this up yesterday, and I think it's a fair point. Like, if you trade Simmons, even if you get back a good return, and I'm with you, I don't think it's going to be a first-round pick. But let's say it
needs
is
to be
a
two
second
multiple picks.
And another pick. Let's say it happens that way.
And that second pick may be having escalator potential.
Yeah. So let's say that's what they get, a second-round pick and you know,
a fifth
that can escalate into a fourth. How do you weigh that if you're Mike Borgonzi with the idea of signing him to a new deal and having a guy that you feel really good about as a foundational player on your defense? And the other part of that is Joe brought up, if you do that, let's say they move on from Jeffrey Simmons. I know everybody feels like Brian Callahan is getting fired and it's a foregone conclusion anyway. But then if they did that, doesn't that kind of tell you that that's what they're doing at that point? Because, I mean, think about how bad they are and then take Jeffrey Simmons away from that. What sort of a chance is the coaching staff going to have at that point?
I'd certainly like the new coach's opinion on the personnel,
sure.
Right? But the peak value is going to be now, right, for a team that's trying to solidify its defense as the AFC pecking order establishes itself. In 2 weeks, in 3 weeks, that's going to be the time to decide. And they've got other tradable pieces. You know, if you're trading some of the other pieces, that to me makes it more like it. But I will say, I've gone from definitely trade them, trade everything, to I don't know if they should.
And that's not – it's independent of the win. That's just with the way that he's playing.
No, completely independent of the win.
Yeah, just the way that he's
playing. Completely independent.
I mean, look, if you told me that this was what he's going to be for the next 3 years, it makes it a little bit more difficult to trade. Because generally speaking, I'm with you. Like, it's defensive tackle, and that's important. But I'd much rather have a dominant edge rusher, right? Like, that we've seen that that's more important in the NFL. But if you're telling me that this is the way he's going to play – for the next 3 years, which is impossible to sit here and predict, that makes the decision, I think, a lot tougher.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's going to, you know, maybe they paper it up to be more than 3 years, but it's going to be 3 years effectively and with the guarantees packed into the first 2 years.
Yeah.
So you're not getting him into his 30s, really.
Right.
Or you're getting right to 30. And if you're, you know, people are scared of 30. I'm not scared of Jeffrey Simmons at 30.
No.
Based on what he's doing physically. So I'm curious to see what Mike Herndon thinks of this in terms of a rebuild. Because the other thing is, look, you like the picks. You like the picks for sure. And this draft has been pretty good. But they took Femi Oladeja
exactly.
With a second-round pick.
Yeah.
And they – look – first off, you have to hit on the picks, which is no guarantee for sure. And the other thing is, you can't pick developmental guys.
Right.
You need immediate impact guys.
Exactly.
Now, they've got immediate impact, obviously, out of Ward. You've got to. got to get immediate impact out of your second. Their third is just emerging and playing special teams. This draft class has been pretty damn good considering the second is invisible. The third just started playing special teams.
Well, and I think it would also be easier to trade Jeffrey Simmons if you, in tandem with what he was doing right now, saw Tavondre Sweat playing at a really high level.
And
you're not seeing him at all.
Right, and here's the other problem. I think Tavondre Sweat is kind of a coin flip at this point in time.
I agree.
Not this regime's guy. Rand Carthon, say what you will about him, and people know how I feel about him, but the Jarvis Brownlee, Tavondre Sweat guys were working for the Titans because Rand Carthon and I've heard to a degree Anthony Robinson had a good way with these guys, right?
Yeah.
This is one of the things that you don't think about when you think, oh, this thing where, you know, so-and-so is his guy and so-and-so is his guy, and you think it's more just about like, oh, I just don't like him. I want my – there's a real personality, work ethic thing. And so Carthon and his administration had a way with Brownlee where they – I don't want to say buddied up, but they were father figure types who knew how to push the buttons on these guys, right? And Borgonzi, I don't think, has those relationships with these guys. I don't know that he's interested in having those kind of relationships. That's not how he's running an organization, right? And is that unreasonable? No, you want to get the most out of those guys, but you're also not going to change your entire management style to make things work for Tavondre Sweat. So Tavondre Sweat either has to fall in line with the new bosses like anybody at any organization, right?
Yep.
Or what happens? You're working somewhere else.
Exactly.
And if he's working somewhere else, then you're going to be down Simmons on a trade. Then you're going to be down Sweat, a second rounder. Now we're talking about all these second and third rounders aren't in the picture. And my God, they're so depleted.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. More coming up on the Titans front with PK. Next, we'll have Mike Herndon at 8:30. All that ahead, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 the game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road. I got some tickets to give away to see the Nashville Predators and their opening night game against Columbus coming up on Thursday night. Be caller 5, 615-737-1025. Caller 5 will win a pair of tickets to the Preds opening night game coming up at Bridgestone on Thursday night. 615-737-1025. Mike Herndon will be with us here in just a few minutes. People asking about Tavondre Sweat in terms of what we need to see from him this year to feel good about him heading into year three.
With fitness.
Number one, get on the field.
Fitness. Show me that you are, not me, show us that you're committed, that you got a work ethic, that you're pushing. You needed to take your game from last year and expand it into more of a pass rusher beyond a run stopper this year. Let's hit the field. I think they put you on IR because of the toe, but also to give you some time to get things straight after the tonsillectomy and everything that training camp missed time set you back. They gave you a month to get caught up. Come back and be caught up. And if you're not caught up and you come back and you're not playing your full load of snaps and all of that, it's going to be cause for some disappointment and some concern.
Oh, get after the quarterback. I'm not asking you for 5 sacks because you're a defensive tackle that largely your job is to stuff the run. But they did say, the next step for him is to get after the quarterback. And when you take somebody 38th overall, there needs to be an element of that to their game, right? Like, you need to be able to get after the quarterback a little bit. So I would say, that's the thing. I mean, we keep talking about the strength of the defense heading into the year needing to be those two up the middle. Well, Jeffrey Simmons has lived up to that and more with what he's done to this point. But if you got to the point, and that's what makes the fact that Sweat has missed the time he's missed so problematic – and by the way, it's what you talked about when he was missing time in training camp. It's played out exactly that way of missing time in camp, ultimately leading to you never really catching up. That's not good if it plays out that way the rest of the year in his second year.
There's prove it time for a lot of guys, and he's top of the list. They need, when Fossil delivered this really good stuff last week, and we'll hear from him again tomorrow, but he talked a little bit about, well, you know, we're not at full strength now, and we're waiting on Sweat and Latham and, you know, whatever else. Those are the two biggies.
Yep.
You know, there's truth to that. But it's also a little naive, and I'm not calling Fossil naive. He knows this. But this idea that we'll be our full selves, teams are very rarely their full selves, you know. And by the time you have both Latham and Sweat back, Latham will be back this week, yep. I'm virtually certain. I think Sweat has one more week on IR, and Sweat will certainly be back the week after he's done with IR. And so then Spears will be back, Latham will be back, Sweat will be back. Hopefully you have a little window there where everybody's back, but somebody else is going to fall out at some point, right? Sure as hell hope it's not an offensive lineman. You know, the football gods naturally select somebody who's not as important as Latham, as Sweat should be. You know, Spears doesn't have a giant role, but they certainly missed him, and it has an impact on Pollard. But it'd be nice to see a healthy stretch for this team because, God knows, we know the thinness.
Oh, yeah, we do. Well, we'd like to correct our friend Ian Rappaport on the program today, who at one point yesterday was talking about Treylon Burks and tweeted out that Treylon Burks, who, as we know, was put on IR to begin the season with the injury that he was dealing with, apparently
he was waived.
Yeah.
And then it cleared waivers, and he reverts to IR.
Yeah, and he says he's been cleared for all football activities. Burks was released from IR and can sign with anyone, which, as you pointed out, that is not the case
Incorrect.
As of yet.
He is on Titans IR. And when he goes off of Titans IR, and their plan is, my understanding is, they will release him. And look, people ask now, you know, a couple people anyway are asking, well, why release him? They're a mess at wide receiver. When they released him, that was the indication that they were done with him, right?
Correct.
They didn't reach an injury settlement, which is the equivalent of paying him for the time it's going to take him to be healthy. Now he's healthy, so they will release him again. And he will have to clear waivers, which Ian gets wrong there as well. So Ian is cutting and pasting what an agent has given him, and he's wrong on two fronts. He's not available, and he's going to have to clear waivers. Will Ian correct himself? No, Ian will not correct himself. Ian will pretend not to have seen any of this.
He does tend to operate that way. There's no doubt
they
about that.
They all do. They all do. None of the big national guys ever correct. I mean, Albert Breer is pretty clean. But if Albert Breer makes a mistake like that, he will amend it at least.
A lot of people are talking about Jeffrey Simmons potentially going to the Ravens to reunite with Derrick Henry, and the Titans get a first and a third. Again, I don't know that they're getting a first-round pick for Jeffrey Simmons. And also, like if the Ravens are going to make a move, they probably need to make it quickly because they're 1-4. I mean, they're in danger of falling out of this thing pretty quickly if they don't get things turned around. And look, you know, I know Lamar's hurt with the hamstring injury. He's going to be coming back at some point here, and when he's back, I feel fine about their offense, even though I will say, like, other than the first game, Derrick Henry really hasn't done anything to this point in the year, so I'm concerned about that. But their defense is so bad, and I know they're banged up on defense. Like, to me, if Baltimore's going to make a move, it probably needs to happen now. They're 1-4.
This could be the worst Ravens defense we've ever seen. Now, I don't have a complete handle on how many guys are missing and how much health is going to cure them. I do know, you know, just listening to some national stuff talking about Buffalo, it sounds like they're looking for an impact guy that could help make everybody better. Kind of one of those guys that can, like, reduce the burden on everybody else and kind of restore the depth chart, you know.
Yeah.
And Jeffrey Simmons would exactly be that guy. I don't have Buffalo's depth chart in front of me either.
Imagine him and Ed Oliver together. That'd be something.
Jeez, yeah. And I don't know how long Baltimore can pretend to be in it. I know that division isn't terrific. But if you're making a go for it move, I would do it if I was Baltimore. I would do it if I was Buffalo ahead of Baltimore.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, it doesn't take much to make Buffalo the clear favorite in the AFC, where, I mean, hell, the Colts are up there.
Yeah.
Do I think Buffalo's scared of the Colts in the long run?
No.
Especially if they get home outdoor playoff game? I would be leaning Bills. And you add Jeffrey Simmons to the Bills, I would really be leaning Bills. Because Jeffrey Simmons is going to help neutralize Jonathan Taylor, who is the key to the Colts going.
615-737-1025, our phone number. Mike Herndon from PaulKuharski.com will join us coming up next. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Paul Kuharski with me here on the program. We are efforting Mike Herndon. Hope to be joined by him in just a few minutes. Take your thoughts on the Titans in the meantime. 615-737-1025, our phone number. 615-737-1025. A lot of reaction to the Jeffrey Simmons thing. Sean says, if you're not getting the first for Jeffrey Simmons, you don't trade him. T from Clarksville, is that on the table for the Titans? If Jeff Simmons is not basically the only bright spot on defense, why would we trade him? That would seem devastating. And others are saying, yep, if you get a second plus some other picks, get Jeffrey Simmons out of here and get some edge rushers. A lot of division between Titans fans on this particular topic, which I think speaks to the tough decision that it will be for Mike Borgonzi and company when the trade deadline comes around.
You know, I think it's about the value of the position, how they value the position, how they value the production, obviously. These are all obvious things. And what they think they can get, the value of what they can get back. I mean, Chad Brinker said, what, 30 picks over 3 years with 10 in the top three? Was that the formula?
Yeah.
I mean, they're not close to that. I think between a potential top three pick trade back, given teams wanting quarterbacks, and a Jeff Simmons trade, they could definitely be in that range. Now, I don't know how strong a motivator that is for them, but they could definitely be in that range. Maybe they get close to that range just with the trade out of their top pick in the draft. But maybe there's a non-quarterback that they love if they end up drafting three or four and they get the best player in the draft, the best non-quarterback in the draft.
Yeah, could be. I believe we have Mike Herndon on the line now. So let's head to our 102.5 The Game phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com and bring in our buddy Mike Herndon to the program. Mike, good morning, buddy. How we doing?
I'm doing well. Doing well. How are y'all?
Doing awesome, man. Appreciate you taking time to be with us. So let's get your thoughts on this conversation. Jeffrey Simmons playing, obviously, high-level football for the Titans right now. The trade deadline's coming up here in a few weeks. I don't know exactly what they'd be able to get from Simmons, but, you know, maybe it's a first-round pick. Probably not. Maybe it's a second-round pick with some others included there. But if you're Mike Borgonzi, Chad Brinker, the decision-makers for the Titans, how are you viewing things with Jeffrey Simmons right now? Are you looking to trade him? Are you looking to keep him around and build with him moving forward?
You know, I'm a little bit torn on the situation because I think there's an argument to be made, certainly, that Simmons is 28 years old. He's got, I think, 2 years left on his contract beyond the end of this season, which then puts him at basically through his age 30 season. So he's going to want an extension, I'm sure, especially if the season continues to go the way that it is right now for him, because I think his guaranteed money is just about out on the current deal. So they're going to have a decision to make one way or another, whether they're going to extend him. And at this point, he'd probably be able to demand, $30 million a year. And if he keeps playing like this, he's worth that. So the question is, how much longer can he play like this? And I know 28 is not old by any means, but you start to get to 30. And for a guy that's had, more than his fair share of, bumps and bruises over the years that he's played through, to his credit. But you kind of wonder how his body holds up post 30 and stuff like that. So I think there's an argument to be made that if you could get a big-time haul, and I think I would draw the line at a first-round pick, that it has to include a first if you want him at this point, because he's just playing too well to otherwise, you know, give him up for a pick that could be in the 50s or 60s, you know, when draft time comes around. You're just not going to get a premium talent most likely in that range, and you're giving up a premium talent. So it would have to be a big haul for me to want to move him.
He's got 6.5 guaranteed next year with a 20 million base. He's got a 23 million base in 27 with zero guaranteed. So, I mean, they could shift a lot around in quote unquote extending him, maybe only adding a year, but guaranteeing a lot of that and shifting it around in a way that it'd be more salary cap friendly. And satisfying him. He hired a new agent, you know, changed his attitude a lot, been silent on these things and letting his play do the talking. I certainly think he's either gone or he's getting a new contract, one way or the other. Cedric Gray turning heads the last 2 weeks. What have you noticed about his play? And is Cody Barton helping him, or is Cody Barton largely quiet?
I think Cody Barton is probably helping Cedric Gray. I think you're seeing, to me, what you're seeing from Cedric Gray right now is a guy who's, it's starting to click. You know, he's playing fast, and this is a guy that was hugely productive at North Carolina, and I was a pretty big fan of his coming out of the draft. Thought he was good value where the Titans picked him. I mean, he had 100 plus tackles in I think three straight seasons at North Carolina, and was only linebacker in his class to achieve that. So he's a guy who has a big history of productivity, and now you're starting to see him certainly trigger faster on all this stuff, which I do think probably does owe a little bit to playing against a guy or playing next to a guy in Cody Barton, who is kind of in full command of that defense, it seems. And I think he's able to play freer because Barton is, you know, assignment sound and helping him be prepared for what's coming. So I think you're seeing Barton help him, but I think you're seeing a guy in Gray who is a lot more physical, honestly, than I kind of expected him to be. But he is playing at a very high level right now to me, and looks like a guy who could be an answer for you in the middle of that defense for the next, you know, few years. I think he's been a pleasant surprise this season compared to what expectations were coming in.
In your view, who is the second best player on this defense, and who is the second best player on this team?
Oh my gosh, that is
everybody's taking a turn at this one, Mike.
Yeah, so to me, if you're looking at pure talent, I think L'Jarius Sneed is still your second best player on the defense. He's got to play like it, and he hasn't really since he's been here. But I still think it's in there, and you see it every now and then. I think he's had a couple good games this season where you've seen the flashes. So I still think it would be Sneed for me as the second best player on the defense. And then what was the
question?
Well,
the best player on offense?
The best player on offense right now, I think it's Peter Skoronski. Yeah. And I think he's been consistent. He had a rough game, not this past game, but the game before against Houston. That was his worst game of the season by far to this point, but he's otherwise been pretty lights out as a pass protector and has clearly taken steps forward to being the guy that they hoped he would be when they took him. You know, probably too high for a guard still and for the impact that you get out of him, but he's turned into a very good player and a guy that will be worth an extension look at the end of this season.
Let's keep making it hard. Who's the second best player on offense?
That is hard. I think as ironic as it is, given all the offensive line struggles, I think you could make an argument for Kevin Zeitler, who I also think has been very good at guard. But, you know, it's probably not a great sign when your two best players on offense are guards.
Definitely not a good sign.
So what do you make of Ward to this point, Mike? Because obviously, the fourth quarter was awesome, and we've talked a lot about that today on the show. He's got a completion percentage at 51.8%. The accuracy's kind of been all over the map. He certainly has not been helped by his receivers, who have dropped the ball a lot. But when you're watching Ward out there right now, what do you see?
Yeah, it's a lot of inconsistency, and that's not, you know, shocking for a guy playing his fifth NFL game, you know, as a rookie. I think some of his fundamentals, so his footwork and arm angles and things like that, they're just extremely inconsistent. And part of that, I think, is part of the appeal for Ward, right? That he is kind of a loose player. And he's a playmaker, and he's able to get away with some of that stuff at times. But I think he's leaned on it maybe too much to where he needs to get more comfortable playing within the offense. And I think he will, as the season progresses, he gets more used to the targets around him, you know, how the offense works, what he likes in the offense, you know, seeing NFL defenses, reacting to them. I think that he'll start to settle down a little bit, but right now I think he's fundamentally kind of all over the place, which I think is causing some of these kind of spray throws that are just not accurate balls. And I mean, even some of the drops, you know, yes, they're drops. Yes, professional receivers should catch the ball, but he's not helping them with his ball placement. You know, guys having to reach behind them, having to turn around in awkward spots. It's been pretty bad. Although, you also see moments when it looks really good, you know, the you know, dime to Helm, the dime to Ridley in that big comeback in the fourth quarter. So I think it's not that he's necessarily a naturally inaccurate passer. I just think he's kind of sped up. I think his mind is not settled right now, and you see it in, you know, where his fundamentals lapse. That's when the accuracy issues come in. And I also think the drops are killing him. I mean, his drop rate is enormous, which makes his completion percentage look worse than what his accuracy probably should justify.
Denard Wilson, the defensive coordinator, talked about simplifying. The reason they complicate in the first place is to cover for lack of talent. You simplify and you tend to expose your lack of talent more. What did you see in terms of simplification in this game, and how did it work? Obviously, the defense is very good after middle of the second quarter, really.
Yeah, I think, you know, I'm kind of I kind of think that's kind of one of the central challenges as a coach is how do you make yourself complex for your opponent but simple for your players? And I think that's something that Kyle Shanahan has talked a lot about in the past, and he kind of does it with, they'll run a lot of the same concepts. They just run it out of different personnel groupings or run it out of different looks with formation and things like that. And that's maybe a little bit tougher to do on defense because so much of what you have to do is react to what the offense is showing you. But I think that is kind of the central challenge as a coach is how do I make myself difficult to play against, but easy for my players to execute. And I think you definitely are seeing some progress. I think they need to, you know, maybe get a little less, you know, cute with some of the back end stuff. You know, just kind of let guys play. Cause I don't think they're not a completely untalented group when they're healthy. You know, like I said, Snead is physically capable of being a very good NFL corner. I think they just need to let him line up and play more. And there's other guys in this group. I think they should play Jihad Ward a lot more on the edge. He's the one guy who has given you something as a pass rusher in that edge group. They need to let him play more. And I think you're starting to see them turn up his snaps a little bit, and they you know are seeing some good results from that.
Mike Herndon writes weekly for PaulKuharsky.com. We haven't talked yet this week, so let's have our conversation on the air. What's coming?
So I am going to be taking a look at kind of the differences with Ward in that fourth quarter breakout and what was different between him early in the game versus late in the game. And, yeah, kind of some of the things that triggered that and whether that's going to be sustainable moving forward, if they found something or if it's you know, kind of just a hot spurt there.
So basically a week full of Ward. I'm writing about Ward today. There's film study about Ward tomorrow.
That's what the people want.
Mike will be tomorrow or Thursday. Ward.
That's It's what people want.
Great. Looking forward to it.
Looking forward to it. Mike, appreciate you taking time to be with us this morning. My condolences to your Longhorns. Sorry about that.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Brutal.
We will talk to you soon, my friend.
Take care.
Thanks, guys.
Mike Herndon with us here on the program. You can check out his work at paulkuharski.com. One more segment with PK coming up next. Take your reaction to what Mike had to say. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Hang with Titans fans, including the crew from 102.5 The Game at the Overhang Bar in Circa. Drink specials are included, plus giveaways including two tickets to the Titans-Raiders game. Go to circalasvegas.com for more information. Robbie Stanley, Paul Kuharski, Ian Safar here with you on this Tuesday morning. Appreciate Mike Herndon from paulkuharski.com for being with us in the last segment there. Interested to see his piece on Ward this week. And I think what he brings up there is really kind of the fundamental question. Was the fourth quarter for Cam Ward, was that a light bulb moment for him, for this team, this offense? Or was that just kind of a flash in the pan and they're going to go back to being an offense that struggles to get into the teens next week against the lowly Las Vegas Raiders?
And we can't know until kickoff on Sunday afternoon and beyond. Look, I don't expect them to be a four-quarter football team all of a sudden, but more than a one-quarter football team, right? There's going to be ebb and flow, and they know that. but they got to do more than they did against Arizona. And look, the Raiders are capable of making some big mistakes. I don't know that you're going to get – look, the mistake that triggered the whole thing where a guy drops a ball, I mean, short of the end zone, clearly this thing isn't erasing itself from football because it's been going on since – who started it? Little receiver – I'm going to forget. But it hasn't stopped.
Yeah.
For some reason, it's an epidemic. Comes up every 6 weeks between college and the pros.
It's amazing.
But I don't think the Raiders are going to do that for the Titans.
No,
I don't think you get
Deshaun
that
Deshaun Jackson?
Deshaun Jackson.
Deshaun Jackson. Jeez. Thank you.
Who ever knew how contagious something that unhealthy for the game could be? they're not getting a gift like that, you know? Maybe they get a bad turnover or two, but maybe they commit a bad turnover or two. Let's see them go out and play in a regular football game against another bad team. How do you do in a regular football game against another bad team on the road? Right? End of three game road trip, too. You know, probably starting to get a little tired, anxious to be home. Not that the home game's any treat.
That one's going to be an interesting one coming up. Let's head to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Welcome in Trey to the program. Trey, good morning. The biggest Cam Ward hater in town.
Morning. How
you
all doing?
Good.
Hey, Paul, you got the right guy for the job. Mike knows exactly what he's talking about. I've been saying the same thing since July. I have a problem with Cam's fundamentals, and I would like to see him play a complete system game. No hero ball. You know, we got on Will Levis about the hero ball. I'm not ready to give him his flowers yet. And like Paul said, I want to see him go down and beat a bad team like the Raiders in a full, complete system game. Hey, y'all have a good day. Thank you.
Thank you, Trey. Appreciate it.
It's not just him. I mean, he needs help. But, yeah, he's the leader. It's only six games in. He can do a lot better than he's been doing.
Yeah.
And not play a full four-quarter system game.
Yeah.
There are going to be moments for a rookie quarterback, you would expect. But let's see more.
Yeah, for sure. And then, you know, for the whole offense, like, yes, I'm with everybody who says the ball has to be more accurate and you got to help your receivers out. But it's also time for the receivers to start helping him out. Like, it's time for when the ball hits you in the hands – bring it down and catch it. And, you know, whether that's Helm getting more targets, as we talked about earlier in the show, really the big thing that I'm wondering coming out of the game, like you mentioned Ridley last year, it took him 7 weeks. He had the Detroit game where he had 10 catches for 130 yards or whatever it was. Is this the launching point for Ridley for the rest of the year? Because if it is, that's a huge deal for this Titans offense.
Nobody's going to win a football game with their quarterback completing 38%,
no,
which is where Cam was through three quarters, right? Did other people contribute to it? Yes. Was it predominantly Cam in this game? It was predominantly Cam. Isle Manor dropped one. Helm dropped one. Isle Manor had another one that was, I think, probably catchable. Killed two third downs.
Yep.
But Cam was all over the place. Two deep shots. I think they were both to DK. One for sure that he was open. Not close.
Yeah.
Not close. You know, and they talk about, hey, we have the shots in there. We don't necessarily get to them, or they don't present themselves. These two presented themselves.
Yep.
Not close.
Yep.
You've got to be able to go for that stuff and have some degree of success. They call them low percentage. They're not 0%.
Right.
They were 0% for the Titans in this game.
PK, you'll be back with us tomorrow in the second half of the show and then again on Thursday. Thanks
Looking
for being with us
today. Looking forward to it. Don't block the box. Be sure to lock your locks.
Next man up with Jake Lyman coming up next. You're listening to 102.5 The Game.